This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, here we are, sitting at 88 degrees on the outside. Inside, we have Mike Winters. Hey there, how you doing?
And it's only, what, 43 in here?
You, just about. Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys filled with envy, come on down. Well, thank you for listening. And this show is about garden advice, landscaping advice, anything to do with your yard. And I take calls, and I'm sure you have some questions. And if so, the number is 673-4464. Ask your question, and I will give you an answer. And then you can proceed and have success in your yard. How's that?
Sounds good.
Guaranteed, okay. But if it doesn't work, it's the radio station's fault, not mine.
There you go.
Well, did you know that you can have a supermarket in your yard every year when it comes to fresh vegetables? And fresh vegetables, of course, are the prices are kind of going up a little bit. So if you always wanted a garden, it isn't too late to start one now. I know it's almost the 1st of July, and summer's here, too late. It ain't too late. And there's a lot of plants. There's a lot of plants out there that are still available. You know, get some tomatoes, some peppers, whatever you like, or try something you don't like. And if you don't have a garden spot ready, put it in a pot. You can have them right in a pot, and they'll grow tomatoes. I already got tomatoes on my plants at home. They're small, they're green, but they're there. And there's a whole bunch of other things coming on too. And we've had our garden in maybe 3 weeks, something like that. And it's doing very, very well.
Nice.
So don't hesitate. It's not too late. You know, most years you can plant some veggies, like I say, now, and in 5 or 6 weeks you got a harvest of some sort, or even less, depends on the summer weather. And our summer weather can last till the end of September, for crying out loud.
Sometimes never at all.
Yeah, until December or Christmas Day. And usually there's no danger of frost or anything like that in September. It would be a rare day in Douglas County to have frost in September, except maybe a Diamond Lake or something like that. So get started, try it out. It's not too late. If you're a first timer, hey, just try a small one, see what happens, see how good you are. It ain't hard. It's just looking at it and doing it, and ask somebody that knows, ask them some questions about watering or fertilizing or how do I do this. But anyway, last week I wrote about removing some lawn.
You write?
Yeah, I write. I write all the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I write. But what do you think I get all these notes? You think they just pop out of my box?
Well, I know they're not printed from Google.
No. But I wrote about removing some lawn and converting that lawn space to growing food. And this week is similar, but a little more creative. You can create a landscape that is all garden, all edible. Take out all the lawn and most of the shrubs and just plant garden plants. And then you could have a farmer's market in your front yard.
Nice.
But for instance, instead of shade trees, plant some fruit trees for shade and food. You get the best of both worlds in there. They may not grow as fast as some of the shade trees, but in time they get up and they do make some shade. And they do produce a lot of food for you after a few years. Fruit trees bloom in early spring, so you can get lots of color when the blooms are on. And then the leaves and the fruit appear. The fruit appears later than the leaves, obviously, but it's the best of all worlds. And if you need a privacy hedge and have a large yard, plant a row of olive trees, for crying out loud. They are a beautiful tree with a gray-green foliage, and they don't lose their leaves. They are evergreen, and they're not real fast, but they're not slow. They're kind of an in-between grower in that sense.
They probably last a lifetime.
Oh, yeah. The one I planted in a landscape, I guess it's been 10 years ago. It's probably 15 feet tall now and produces – olives every year. You know? And it's the black Spanish olive is the one that...
The best kind.
Yeah, well, it's the one that works here in Douglas County.
Oh, okay.
Because it'll take the heat as well as the cold. You know, when we had snow and mm-hmm. ice and all that stuff, it didn't miss a... It hardly lost a leaf. And they are evergreen. So they don't lose their leaves unless, you know, somebody picks them off, I guess.
Or a deer?
A deer, maybe. I don't know. But they are a beautiful tree. They make a beautiful single tree in your front yard or, like I say, a screen of olive trees, and then you get the produce from it. And they require little water and fertilizer, just some the first few years until they establish. And after the first year in the ground, like I say, it's almost no care. Almost, not quite, but almost. You know, they may want a drink of water in July and August, or maybe a little bit in September. But other than that, they're pretty much maintenance free. And like I say, they are a real producer. You could actually plant some squash at the base of the tree, and and the tree would act as a trellis, and the squash would wind its way up the trunk, and you'd have squash blooms and everything else, and squash right there, or cucumbers, maybe something that's viney, and you got a double landscape in the same bed, so you'd have some food at the bottom and food at the top, but. A small hedge in the front yard. You want a hedge along your front yard. There's the sidewalk or the street, and you always want a small hedge because you got a lawn and all that kind of stuff, and you don't want people walking through it. Well, try a row of blueberries. Blueberries are a pretty plant. They're mostly evergreen year-round, and they flower in the spring fairly early, and the leaves are green and red, shades of red and shades of green. And you can prune them if you want into a tight hedge, or just let them grow natural. They're not real fast, but they're what I would call a medium fast grower, something like that. But they would make a perfect hedge, and they're evergreen. What the heck? It's good. And if you want like a nice edible ground cover, then strawberries are your plant. And instead of a lawn, you put 100 strawberry plants in your backyard instead, and you're going to be eating strawberries for the next 50 years or so, because once they start producing, you can't pick them fast enough, you can't eat them fast enough, so you better learn how to make strawberry jam or strawberry punch or something like that, and sweeten up your neighbors and give them a couple of gallons of strawberries every once in a while, or invite them over for a picnic, and instead of feeding them, they can pick the strawberries.
Yeah.
And we call that a picnic. Okay?
That sounds good.
Yeah, why not?
A little strawberry shortcake.
Yeah. And they spread slowly, but, every year they have beautiful white flowers kind of with a yellow center in the spring. And they're, again, an easy care plant with delicious food. And they also make a nice border plant. You know, you have a wall or a sidewalk or driveway, yeah. And you want some kind of a nice ground cover in there to, take up the space. Well, a strawberry plant would be a good thing. This whole thing that I was thinking about and I was speaking about now, I thought, well, supposing somebody doesn't want to have a yard, you got to have all these other shrubs, and you got to fertilize them, and you got to do this, and you got to do that, and you got to prune them. I mean, that looks nice. I mean, I'm not. But instead of planting just decorative stuff, plant in their place things that you can harvest and things that you can eat, and as many evergreen types as you can possibly get, because they're out there. And and most of them are very easy. I mean, banana trees ain't going to do it here, so don't even try that. They're an indoor.
There's enough bananas around here
yeah,
anyway.
We got a lot enough. We got lots of bananas, man. But if you have a large yard and you wanted, say, a large tree for shade, plant a walnut tree or an almond tree. Walnuts get pretty big. They're not fast, but they're not slow.
Yeah.
And you get some good shade and good healthy food, and it's all in one right there on the same tree.
That's right.
Yeah. And just think of the cookies and cakes you could make with the walnuts. And walnuts are a health food. I mean,
They're good for the ticker.
Yeah, well, they're good for something. They taste good, too.
Yes, they do.
I mean, and they make, like I say, you grind them up and make some good cookies out of them.
Yeah.
But you've got some nice shade and good, healthy food all in one. I mean, how wonderful is that? And if you've got a big yard, put three of them out there. Or maybe an almond tree. I mean, almonds will grow well here. I've got one growing out at my place. It hasn't produced anything. It's, you know, rather young. It's about, I think 5 feet tall at this point. Mm. And they're not noted for their fast growth, but it's healthy looking. And So I have to do a little bit of research on it to find out, you know, at what age does it finally start to produce, and will the bees pollinate? Yeah, I'm sure they will if it has flowers. And it probably had flowers this year, but not very many because, like I say, it's a smaller tree. Mm. Now, another good landscape food plant, grapes.
Uh-huh. They grow anywhere.
They grow anywhere. You stick them in the concrete, they'll grow. They're easy to grow. I mean, anybody can grow grapes, and they're very productive once established. You'll have so many grapes, you'll say, what in the world do I do with all these grapes? You'll start making wine, giving them away to your neighbors and everything else, but they're delicious. One fall, I think I was 13.
Oh, got
13. It. And I was looking for work, and there was this place. We were kind of living temporarily in a place called Healdsburg, California, and it's right on the Russian River, which is a lot like the South Umpqua, but big grape region. So I went down to the employment office, and I said, you got any work for, you know, a young guy like me, blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, sure, you know, be here at 5 or 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. There's a family that you can go out with. And they take this bus. They know where to get to it, or they have a car. I can't remember now. But this nice Mexican family with three little kids pulled up, and I got in the car, and off to Grapeland we went.
About
4 or 5 miles out of town. And there were rows and rows and rows and rows of grapes. Oh. It wasn't huge, but it wasn't small at the same time.
Yeah.
And they have a special curved knife. And I guess they call them a grape knife. It's a very short blade, but it's curved like a half moon and sharper than a razor, for crying out loud. Yeah. And they showed me how to do it. They said, well, you grab the bunch of grapes, and then you go up to the stem of that bunch, and you just kind of snip it towards your thumb, you know. But be careful because it's sharp. And by the end of that day, my thumb looked like it'd been in a meat cleaver fight.
Oh, Lordy.
And what was funny was I was on one row, and the husband was on the next row, and the wife was on the next row, and they had, I think, two little kids, maybe three. And they're running up and down, and they're having fun and all this. And we're on a small hill. Wasn't very steep, but it was, oh gosh, maybe 200 feet long. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But at least 200 feet long.
Yeah.
And we're picking, and pretty soon I'm looking up, and they're about 20 feet ahead of me in their row, both of them. And I'm going as far. I was a good worker at 13. I mean, I'd been working all my life on ranches and stuff. And they're just going to town and talking and chatting and listening to the radio. They had a portable radio. And I'm going as fast as I can. And another hour later, they're sitting on top of the hill with their lunch. And I still got about, 50 feet of grapes to go. Oh. That's how fast these people were.
Did they come down and help you?
No, they did not. Uh-huh. But she saved me a sandwich, I think.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. And then they had some Kool-Aid or something to drink. So
nice.
Took care of that. But grapes, like I say, they're very abundant, very fast growing. And they make a great screen if you want to screen your neighbor out.
Yep.
And you just build a grape arbor, which would you could do it with two 4x4s and some cross pieces of 1x2, and then plant the grapes at the bottom, and they start to go up, and pretty soon you can't see the wood on the arbor because the grapes have taken over.
Yep.
And it's beautiful. Do you have a break?
You're
looking. We'll be back with more landscape edibles.
All right. What's our number?
673-4464 is the number to call for a question.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I had a teacher that would hit me, too, with a ruler.
They hurt.
Oh, Lord, do they ever.
Yeah, you throw a spit wad, and then, boy, they're right there with that ruler. Hold your hand out. And, oh, no, don't quack.
That was my first adventures of a male teacher. I don't know.
The ones that hit me were all female.
Oh, were they?
They were tougher than the males. I got along with the males real well. Anyway, I'm talking about... a landscape where you don't have, you know, just normal plants. You can do your whole yard in a garden if you want to. You know, the walnut tree for shade, the fruit trees for food and a little bit more shade, grapes for a screen between your neighbors or build an arbor. You know, one of them things that have sides and a roof and plant your grapes at the bottom and they grow over the top and it's a nice shady spot in your backyard. You can sit with a picnic table and enjoy your iced tea or your grape juice because you're going to have a lot of grapes.
and wine if you prefer.
Yeah, but that takes longer than the grape juice to make. But that will give you a lot of cool shady spots to sit in the summer. And the grapes you plant at the base of the arbor within, 3 years, they're up to the top of the arbor, spreading across the arbor, and they're just going gangbusters. And they're very, very hardy, and little care is needed. And like I say, they do great along a fence for a screen proposition. So you've got some nice plants there that are not just beautiful to look at, but are beautiful and edible at the same time.
Yeah, it is.
Now, I've never seen a yard done this way, but maybe there's somebody out there that says, wow, that's a great idea. Mabel, take out the lawn. We're putting in a garden, which is good. Landscaping with edibles is very unique. and like I say, I haven't seen a complete yard done this way. But in the things that I named, the plants that I named, there's a few, you know, super hardy plants to start with and get a feel for, you know, what's going to do good in your yard. And as you gain experience in this and you see, you know, what works and what doesn't, you can switch things around a little bit. But most garden plants are very, very hardy, and some are perennial types that will last year after year and not lose their leaves and not go dormant. And they go dormant, but they don't lose their leaves and are just sticking in there.
Yeah.
and you can have some flowers. You can spread some flowers around and attract the honeybees in there to do the pollinization. And you'd have what you call a very organic yard. And, you know, you think of it this way. With food prices escalating, it seems like every week, gardening is a good thing to learn and get a hold of. And there's still a lot of veggie plants available, like I say, on the market out there. So you can get started now. And Home Depot, the Co-op, Lowe's, Bi-Mart, they still have lots of vegetables sitting out there in the little 4-inch packs or 6-packs, they're long and stringy right now, but that doesn't matter because when you take them home, you plant them a little bit deeper and maybe put a little stake, you know, a little 2-foot stake just to kind of hold them up until they get strength and diameter growth, and then they take off on their own. So that's good. And if you think that's a great idea, why don't somebody try that and call me back and say, hey, yeah, man, it works. It looks so good. And everybody's in my yard, though, stealing my vegetables, stealing my landscape.
Stealing my tomatoes.
Yeah. But, you know, as we enter the warmer days of summer, and I think we're starting to enter that now, watering our yards, of course, is priority number one. And I talk about this every summer. It's not... Not flooding like a rice paddy, but a weekly schedule to keep lawns and plants alive and thriving. That's what you want. And if you have an automatic sprinkler system, make sure when you turn it on, you walk around, you make sure all the heads are operable and working, doing what they're supposed to do, rotating in the manner they're supposed to rotate, adjust the throw of maybe you have a head that's supposed to push water out 15, 20 feet. Well, if it's only pushing out 8 feet, maybe the nozzle is clogged. It's the easy thing. You screw, unscrew the top, take the nozzle out, blow through it, see, make sure there's no, you know, buildup of moss or some ladybugs living in there or something like that.
Yeah.
And put it back together, adjust it, and it's good to go. So that those are the kind of summer things that you want to get a handle on right now, because as we proceed into July, August, and September, at least July and August are two, you know, fairly warm, dry months, consistently fairly warm.
Certainly starting out that way.
Yeah, yeah. But June has been a great month.
It has.
It has been made,
great.
It has, you know, it's cool in the morning still, and today is a little warm, but we've had two warm days in a row? I mean, like
pretty much
89.
But it cools off in the evening.
Yeah, yeah, and the breeze starts blowing and cools things off. But that will come to, I think, screeching halt here as we progress into July and August. So watering, your watering schedule is important. Make sure you water in the morning or in the evening after the heat of the sun has gone down, and you can keep your plants and your lawns alive and thriving. Mature plants that are well-rooted do not need the same watering as newly planted shrubs, trees, or cover crops or garden crops or ground covers, any of that. The newly planted ones need a little bit extra in those hot days because the ground dries out fairly well. And I'll start with some ground covers and flowers like petunias, geraniums, and potted plants. These plants need the most frequent watering, like every 2 or 3 days, because they're containerized and they're above ground, so not only do they get the sun beaming down on top of them, but the pots always also warm up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you feel the pot and you go, wow, that is warm.
Ouch.
Yeah, so the inside of the pot is warm as well. And, yep. And you just have to get used to what kind of pots you have and do your soil testing, say, once or twice a week just to see. And then as soon as you learn that, you can ration the water accordingly. You don't have, it won't run up your water bill a great deal or anything like that. But if you get, like I say, too much water is going to kill a plant, and light watering will thrive and produce bigger roots. And, you know, most mature plants that are well-rooted are not going to need the same kind of watering. They're, you know, if they've been in 3 years or something like that and they've done well for 3 years, maybe you can ignore them for a while. I mean, I've got some plants that we might water once every 3 weeks, maybe once a month during the summer, and they're fine. They do well.
Yep.
they've got a little bit of afternoon shade, but they get the full morning sun up till, say, 2 o'clock or 2:30, right in there on these long summer days.
Oh, what a life.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. And then as the sun progresses back over, there's larger shade trees in the background, natural oaks and maples and things like that, fir trees, et cetera, that will shade that area. And that's when we do our watering, of course, is when it gets shady like that. But if you have, like I say, the petunias, the geraniums, the all those nice potted plants, they're going to need a little bit more stuff. I've got a bonsai collection at home that we water at least every other day because they're in very shallow pots. You know, the pots in a bonsai pot, maybe, 4 inches deep at the most.
Not deep.
And the plant is mounded in some of the roots because you want them to look ancient and old.
Yeah.
Some of the roots are gnarled and are on top of the surface. So you have to keep those a little bit more damp or water them a little bit more often to keep them alive. But, you know, we keep them pruned, so there's not a whole lot of leaves that they have to worry about. So it's a balance that you have to achieve. I've killed a few, not very many, over the years by seeing how much I could stress them. And, you know, do I need to let them go another day, see what happens. Let them go another day. And then when the leaves start, you know, hanging downward and are going, help, help. That's when you really shoot them with water and get them good.
Sometimes it doesn't always work, huh?
Yeah, sometimes I've lost one or two over the years.
Oh, that's not many.
You know, no, but I got about 30 or 35 of them at home on my back wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're in the shade by, say, 4:30, you know, somewhere in there. And they don't get into the sun till about 9 in the morning. So it's not that bad. It's not like they were out next to the paved road somewhere and trying to...
Soaking up the sunshine from everywhere.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But when the temp gets up like in the 90s and we're, what, 88 today or something
like
that?
Yeah, 88, 89 now.
89, yeah. They're going to need a little bit. But wait until the sun goes down or it's almost down and there's still daylight out there. And then give everything a good soak. But again, you won't have to do it every day. Because in this edible landscape plan, I eliminated all the lawns. There's no more lawns to water, and lawns really suck up a lot of water, whereas shrubs and plants that I'm speaking about don't need as much water, not as often and not as much. So you'll save, I don't know what water bills run nowadays because I run off a spring, so I don't have a water bill.
No, landlord so far is paying mine. So.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what yours is on a monthly basis?
It can't be very much. I just shower and stuff. I don't have a washer, dryer, or anything like that.
Oh, is that why your clothes are always dirty?
No, be quiet.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to tell.
No.
Oh, gosh. But, you know, in these 90 degree plus days, yeah, you're gonna have to check on them. You're going to have to pay attention to them. But the shade will help with all plants. So if you've got a large plant, large pots that need water, maybe say every 2 or 3 days, give them a good soak. And, you know, like I say, the small pots maybe every other day. Every plant is different, every pot is different, and it's just getting used to it. Don't take somebody's word totally. You have to do your own experimentation. What do we got here? Call?
Looks like another break.
A break. We'll be back. 673-4464 if you want to call with a question.
Please do. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, let's get right to her. We got a phone call. You are on the air with Mike Winters. Good afternoon.
Yes, I listened to you a while back, and you were talking about pomegranate trees. I just wondered if you ever found a place to get any.
No, not locally in Oregon. I haven't. I think you'd have to go into California because it's like a big crop down there. And I think you'd have to go down in there, except maybe, you know, some of the times the box stores have, you know, cutesy little baby pomegranate trees. You know, they might have a dozen of them for sale just for, you know, giggles or something.
Okay, I thought I'd call. My aunt and uncle had them when I was a kid down there in Northern California. So
what part of Northern California?
Jackson, Sutter Creek.
Okay, yeah, they probably grow up here. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't.
Okay, well, that's all I was wondering about.
Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. You have a good day.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.
All righty, see how easy it is? That opens up our lines.
Yeah, and if you have a question, 673-4464, we'll get you right on the air. You ask your question, and I'll give you whatever answer I make up in my mind at the moment. I'll give you the straight
story. All right, Mr. President.
Oh, now that's a low blow. I was talking in the last segment about the pots and the types of plants that you might have in the pots and the watering that you'd have to do with those types of things. But there are a few plants that you wouldn't even have to worry about. Like if you have some kind of a cactus in a pot, I wouldn't worry about too much about watering it. They can take the heat, they can take the sun, they grow naturally in the hot, dry areas. And you know, we don't have too many around. You find them, again, in like, Lowe's and Home Depot as kind of, you know, an ornamental plant. And I've bought them there before and put them in pots and stuff. And well, I think we still have one left. I'm not sure. It might have some of them, they get frozen. you know, they don't mind the heat, but they hate the cold, baby. That's not their.
Kind of reminds me of someone I used to know.
Yeah. Cactus Kathy. Okay.
That was her name. No.
Yeah, no, I just guessed. You know, I got a call the other day, and I'm still doing advisory work or consulting work and drawing some plans, but I'm not active in the nursery business anymore. So it's been a little bit easier to maintain a schedule and handle the calls and things like that. But I got a call the other day from a man that has around dry spots in his lawn, and I asked the usual questions about water and fertilizer and all that kind of stuff. And he gave all the right answers, but he thinks it's a grub problem.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, grubs are famous in Douglas County. They're little wicked things. The eggs are laid by a crane fly, and they're laid in the lawns, and then the eggs hatch into these little grayish segmented worms, and they go down into the soil, and they survive on grass roots. So there you are. You've got this nice green lawn. It's looking good, and all of a sudden you start to see these dry spots. All of a sudden the lawn was a piece of the lawn is brown. What the heck? I've been watering. I've been fertilizing. I've been doing all, you know, the right things that Mike Winter said to do. And I got a dry spot, a brown spot. And that's usually a sign of grubs because, like I say, they're in a very centralized, tight location initially. And then as they grow into their wormhood, if you will, they start eating, you know, and eating and then spreading. And
gross. That,
yeah, they are. They're a gross, stinking little booger. And we talked about it, but he said, well, I don't know. He said, I called one of your former employees over here, and he checked for grubs and by digging out a small piece of the lawn, and we didn't find any grubs in there. Hmm. And I thought, well, that's strange, because if they were in there, you would find them. You don't have to go very deep, you know, maybe 4 to 6 inches. But he did this a smell test on the dry spots, and his conclusion was that a cat or a dog used the lawn as a pit stop.
Uh-oh.
And I said, did you wash your hands afterwards? He says, yes. But he told me, my former employee, he's still employed by Wintergreen, but he told me that the ground was very hard and a little dry, and this gentleman that called me, and I'm going to see him tomorrow at 10 o'clock and inspect it myself. And he said, but it was so hard and dry, it didn't look like the lawn had been prepped very well. And you know how I harp on preparation, soil preparation, do this, these are the steps, blah, 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 add this, add that, so that when you lay a sod lawn or do a seed lawn, when the initial roots begin to grow, there's no resistance because the ground is nice, it's ready, and the roots can get down in there. But if you don't prep it correctly, you'll get the initial rooting, but then if they get down there, you know, an inch or two, and it's hard ground, they can't penetrate, and maybe the water's not penetrating down as far as the root systems are, that's when you begin to get these brown spots. You know, that's a possibility. I'm not saying that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I won't know till tomorrow.
Yeah.
When I actually check it. But the conclusion he came to was the new lawn that I came to, that the, like I say, the new lawn wasn't prepared properly. And I asked him what the landscaper did, and he said, oh, he added this, and he added that, and he added that, which sounded good, but possibly he didn't add enough or till it down deep enough to mix it with the native soil, which is clay and kind of little tiny rocks and stuff, because this is one of the new subdivisions there in Winston. Mm. And it wasn't agricultural ground. It's up on a hill. So consequently, you've got more rock up on a hill. You don't have very much topsoil on that hill. So I got to do some detective work tomorrow and see what's going to happen. But soil prep is the best thing for lawns and plants for surviving and growing well. Yeah, it's a little bit of work. Yeah, you got to buy some material for it. But the better you make that soil, the more quickly that lawn or that plant or that tree, whatever you're planting in there, is going to root out and take hold and get secure. And then as it builds its energy level, its root system level, as it builds that up over a year or two, it'll be strong enough at that point that it can get down into the native soil slowly, but it's vigorous enough to penetrate that native soil and get into that clay stuff and survive well. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I discovered over the years as a landscape contractor. And how do I make sure, you know, because when I first started, I mean, I prepped the soil as best I thought it could be. But over the years, I learned that I wasn't prepping it good enough. And so I continued to dig deeper holes, deeper than what, say you got a tree in a pot that's what they say, a 5 gallon size pot, which is say 14-15 inches tall and a foot in diameter, and that's the roots are filling that pot. So when you dig the hole, you don't dig the hole the same size as the pot. You dig the hole 6 inches deeper and 6 inches wider so that you can put good soil in the extra 6 inches below. So when the root system is sitting on it, it's sitting on 6 good inches of soil that the roots can get into. And then when you're filling around the tree or the shrub, you're filling it in with this good mixture of organic material and topsoil and maybe a little sand, fine grind bark mulch, old stuff. And that's what they survive on. That's what they love. That's what they'll do best in. And
it's all natural.
Yeah, it's natural.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's you know, you invest say $50, $60, $70 in a tree, or even more. You don't want that thing to die in a week and a half.
No,
or
that's a good
a month
chunk.
And a half. Right?
Yeah.
No way. And that's why when we owned the nursery, my daughter Jill was the main plant person, selling the plants and talking to folks. But we always made it a point to say, what kind of ground do you have? What kind of soil do you have? Well, you know, some people say, well, it's hard stuff, or it's all clay, or, yeah. Oh, I live along the river, it's really nice. Even if you live along the river and it's really nice, you still have to add some organic material to the really nice stuff so that root system will have something to eat, too. You know, not just sandy river loam soil.
It's hungry.
Right. But it's just an insurance thing. You have to do a little bit more work, but you know that your plant will survive. That's all there is to it. And that's, you know, I found that out over the long haul to where we planted, oh gosh, I don't know how many thousands of trees and thousands of shrubs over the last 40 plus years. And I would say 95% of them are still alive and growing well and
cool.
Doing well. You know,
nice.
I mean, yeah. We've never had a major catastrophe where we planted 25 plants and 24 of them died. That would be a catastrophe. There would be something wrong with that soil, you know, like somebody put some poison in there or over-fertilized.
Or your neighbor didn't like it. And
your neighbor says, I'll show them people.
I'll take a weed eater to it.
Yeah, well, you can tell weed eater damage. that's pretty easy.
All right, let's take a break.
Okay, we'll be back.
And the number?
673-4464.
And it is News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, here we are in the final segment, but yet we still have time for you to call.
673-4464. Any question is good, as long as it's on, you know, garden stuff and lawns and things like that.
Nothing off topic, huh?
Nothing off topic, please. I'm not good off topic at all. I don't know anything else but trees.
Well, you're good at, well, I can't. Kyle would not like if I said you're good at politics.
What?
Your topic, politics.
Oh, yeah, I could speak at length at that, but I don't.
I know. I wish we could.
I was in that mix for quite a few years.
Yes, you were. What about 2 decades?
Not quite, but almost.
Yeah.
So one way to rectify those problems of brown spots, let's say there's not grubs in there.
Yeah.
There might be something else, and if you can identify it, great. But if the bottom line is maybe some extra water, and if it was an animal that is using your lawn as his bathroom or her bathroom, then you want to extra water in those spots to dilute the urine and whatever chemicals are killing the lawn.
Yeah.
And so it's... you know, if it's, like I say, relatively new, it's not time to thatch it or anything like that. And if you've watered it, you know, extra, if you will, for, say, 2 weeks and nothing is coming back, then you might want to throw some seed and maybe put a little peat moss on top and start afresh. And it'll all match and come together. And, you know, a new lawn... it doesn't have a thatch problem usually. You don't get the thatch problem until maybe the lawn's been in 10 years or something like that, or 7 years, you know. But timing is everything. So, and one thing on, and we're skipping over to a new topic now.
Already.
If some of your shrubs are finished blooming, prune them. And if the shrub is, you know, fairly large, you can prune it now down to the size you want it. It's not going to hurt the shrub, but it's already past its flowering time, so you're not going to miss the flowers. And this will ensure that it can get new growth and can set new flower buds for next spring. You don't want to prune the shrubs when they, you know, say February or March. You can, but you're not going to have as many flowers. It's good to prune them, the perennial types, in the early summer. If they're getting humongously large and they're in your way and blocking your view from the driveway or whatever, go ahead and whack them. It's not going to hurt them. Mm. And as they grow new growth, then they will, like I say, through the summer, set new buds for the following spring. And then next spring rolls around, and guess what? You got that same flowering shrub, but it's a lot smaller, a lot denser, and a lot fuller. So this is a good time to do all that. And like I say, not all shrubs need pruning in the middle of winter. You can if you have to. I mean, there's trees, fruit trees, things like that. But for instance, here's another instance. Rhododendrons should be pruned after they bloom and before they set the bloom buds for the next year. So you've got blooming rhodies in your yard. When those blooms start to fade and drop off, that if your rhodie is too big for the spot that it's in, you can whack it to the size you want, and it's not going to hurt next year's blooming process.
Does that go for the Easter lily, too?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, you know, in general terms, you can try it and kill it and, you know, blame me.
All right. Well, yeah. I think it's done blooming. It's
well,
just
then go ahead and prune it back.
Okay.
Yeah, try it out. See if I'm telling you the truth.
Well, neighbors don't seem to want to trim the Easter lily. It's just my China vine, they weedy.
China vine. Oh, gosh. But rhodies, you know, they, like I say, they set their buds for now, for next year. So you don't want to prune it. If you prune them in the fall, then you're cutting all the flower buds off, or most of them off.
No.
Because if you're reducing them in size and cutting back the tips, et cetera, to make it grow fuller, which it will, but it'll bloom far less than it did the previous year. So let it bloom out, let it fade out, then prune it, and then it has ample time to set new buds over the summer for the following spring. And azaleas basically are the same way. And not like I say, all of them need to be pruned in the middle of winter. If they're outrageously large and blocking your view, yeah, whack them and get them into a size that you can manage and handle. And after pruning is a good time for fertilizing your blooming shrubs so that they will develop more healthy buds for that next year. That's good to do. And they're in high growth mode right now until, you know, September, October, and then they start slowing down. And that also is dependent on weather. Okay. And if it snows in August, all bets are off, okay? You know? But if you have fruit trees in your yard, like apple, peaches, pears, you know, plums, that kind of thing, you can thin out some of the crowded apples and give some space for the others to fully develop. Because I know on one of my apple trees, you know, there's a bunch, like I got three apples, and they're all you know, like golf ball size.
Yeah.
But they're all right there together.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't separate, you know, take the one in the middle out, then there's no air circulation, and the ones that are touching will develop bad spots. And they'll look bad, and they'll taste okay, but they'll look bad, and you go, I don't want to eat that stinking apple. It's got the brown spot.
Brown,
on it.
Yeah.
So you want to thin them. If you thin them just a little bit, just lightly, just enough to get the air to circulate and the sunlight to circulate around the fruit, so it ripens evenly over the space of the summer. And you can do that to apples. You know, it's hard to do with plums. Plums seem to be, you know, I mean, when a plum tree is producing fruit, it looks like there's a pickup load on that tree.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And I don't know how, maybe you shouldn't even touch a plum tree. Let it go.
Yellow jackets love them.
Oh, gosh, those yellow jackets. Yeah, we've already got our yellow jacket traps out. Filling them up. As soon as my wife put them out, they swarmed and went in.
Yeah, got rid of some of them.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. I hope you liked it. I hope I did a good job. And keep listening.
All right. Same time next week.
I will be here.
All right. Stay tuned for the afternoon report next on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It is coming up to 5 o'clock.